Hey SEOs and content marketers, say goodbye to crazy spreadsheet mashups and experience unprecedented connectivity between your SEO planning and reporting data. Introducing Audience Key, technology for keyword mapping, content brief automation, and rank tracking that form an SEO strategy system providing unparalleled feedback loops between planning, reporting, and optimization activities. Put your time and energy into strategy, not data upkeep. Visit audiencekey.com and apply for a free trial today.
FM. It is the 25th of April, 2024, and mark this date on your calendars, either on paper or digitally, because you're going to be referencing it moving forward in search history, because quite possibly one of the biggest scandal in Google's history is taking place. I don't know what to call this, maybe the Ghostbuster scandal. We'll get to that in a few minutes. This podcast is recorded live to podcast on April the 25th, 2024. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. Christine Schackinger from Site and Cell Walls.
Hey, everybody.
And you're listening to the number four of the top 17 podcasts for 2024, as recognized by Search Engine Journal. It's nice to wake up to, eh?
Yes. Very nice.
Search Engine Journal routinely ranks the top podcasts in the SEO and search marketing spaces. And
yeah.
Webcology is often on the list, although we've moved up the list quite a bit. I'm not sure how they rank or substantiate our rankings, but we're number four.
I didn't know if it's in this particular order, but I'll take number four.
I think we were like number 13 last year.
Yeah, I think so. No, that was very nice. It was nice to see this morning that we're on that list and we have moved up a bit.
Well, I mean, the cool thing is SEO has always been cooperative and collaborative. There's 16 other amazing podcasts on this list, and several others that are that I can actually think of off the top of my head that aren't on the list. I wish it was a top 20 or a top 40.
Yeah, true.
And I just feel like we're really in competition with these guys as much as we're in like collaboration with them in one way or another.
Yeah, I would say that. I mean, our whole industry is based on sharing information with each other, since, you know, Google doesn't like to do that so much. So I think it's definitely collaborative.
Google might like to do it so much, but insiders and the DOJ like to do it for us. But we'll get to that in a few minutes. But this is a wild, literally wild day. And it's hard to look at other news stories knowing what's coming up. Brighton's coming up. In fact, Brighton's happening right now.
It is. Brighton, UK. The Brighton, US is in the fall. It is a wonderful conference. So,
The Brighton is happening right now. Brighton SEO is on. So there'll be news coming out of there pretty soon. That's really looking forward to that. As you all are probably fairly widely aware, the core update is rolling on and on and on and on and on and on. It's what, the seventh week now?
We're at 51 or 52 days. Now, people do need to remember that it's not, I hate that Google called it the March core update, because there's like five updates in there. It's like spam interaction, spam brain, HCU, core update with new HCU. So we're in the core update, new HCU period of the updates. So we don't know. I don't know if the HCU has been fully rolled in or not. They haven't told us much about that, but, and it'll be different. It will be a page level classifier, not a site wide killer. So
I think at the end of it all, Google might be calling this the March 2024 core update, but SEOs over time, I think, are going to end up referring to this as the UFO update. The UFO? Google Google UFO update.
I have words in my head for what that might stand for, but I won't say them out loud.
So they're exactly what you think. Unfunking ourselves. So yeah, Google got funky there. They got like crazy funky. Now, yeah. I'm not talking, there's good funky and there's bad funky. You know, it's one of those words. they
like
got
blue cheese.
Crazy
It's
funky.
blue cheese. It's good funk.
So, well, there's great funk. I love some great funk, but
I do.
there's also some awful. And, you know, funk is one of those words. It also can have awful connotations as it stands in for several other words, right?
Yeah, that is
So
the word
this
I was
is
thinking of. It's a black.
strongly suggests this is the UFO update, the unfunk ourselves update.
Yeah, I thought it was, I would have replaced it with the UD, you know, like my autocorrect. the F duck, the duck. So lots of sites have been experiencing massive damage. We still don't know everything, and it does seem like the algorithm may have some errors in it, but that's not been sussed out fully yet.
Okay, but again, why might Google have a roll it back because we got an update? We'll get to that in a few minutes. It's kind of scandalous, really. Speaking of, is it or is it not happening or going to happen? The parasite crackdown?
Yeah, it's still happening, but Gary misspoke this week. He said it had already started rolling out, and everyone's like, it has, because no one's seen any evidence of it. And he's like, oh, he made a mistake, which happens, you know. So anyway, he said, I was told that it had happened. I was wrong. This hasn't launched yet. Apologies for the confusion. So if you heard that the parasite update had started, it has not. It will not start until May. Most likely May 4th or 5th is the date right now.
The Cinco de Scrio update.
Yeah. For those that don't know, we should probably explain real quick what a parasite update is. By the way, we are seeing evidence that very large companies are getting a nod ahead of time. Like Forbes has already de-indexed its whole coupon site. So,
well, that's because even though they do idiotic things, their webmasters aren't idiots.
Yeah, and also, and we know, because we know people in the industry, if you're a very big brand, sometimes Google will give you a heads up before a big update. You don't get treated differently in the update, but you get notice that you might be in a violation. You might want to do something.
Well, I mean, to quote Google itself, and perhaps even to quote Matt Cutts himself, I'm not positive if this is a direct quote, but there's only one BMW.
Right. And there are things that, you know, people think that brands, that's the big discussion this week, that brands get all the special preference. They don't. Brands just have really good signals. But there are items that have to be in the index or Google would look like it was broken. I mean, if you went to go to see the Wall Street Journal and it wasn't there, then, you know, Google would look dumb. So I'm sure there's some level, we know, like BMW once years ago got hit and then it was back in like 3 days, you know. So there are some special things they do to make sure brands don't just disappear out of the index because it would make Google look dumb. But they don't get special. There's not like a special, I'm a brand, so I get special SEO. That's not how that happens.
Well, okay, so that's not how it happens exactly until you're a brand. And then that is kind of how it happens. No one's giving you special treats, but your size carries extraordinary heft. And so the time it takes Google to figure out that a small site has made the corrections necessary to get back into Google's good graces, think of the number of signals that have to get sent and how Google signals are acquired, measured and sent and measured by Google. A big brand is just, its footprint is everywhere, just enormous. It's mind-blowing.
Yes,
small company can't come close to competing to that.
And I know Gary, and it's a story for later, but we might as well throw it in now. Gary said, you know, links aren't as important or whatever. They need less links. They have massive links, and they have massive links from really good sites that say they're really good. That's why they're a brand.
Yep.
So that helps to ward off a lot of ills that could happen if you're just a small brand that's not well. And remember, we said that Gary said in the video last week or the week before that importance on the web was one of the ranking signals, which is 100% links.
And even if let's just say for the sake of argument, and again, just for the sake of argument, because I don't believe this is true, but even if links didn't mean anything rank wise, they're still conduits of signals. This happened because my crawler moved from here to here to here, and I now know this happened. It's the conduit of electricity. So the links are really important. Even if what they have a zero rank value, which is probably not true, they're still, that's how energy flows.
This is true. That is how energy flows. And it's how Google discovers content.
Right,
so
exactly.
If tons of sites are sending you to this brand, it's not because Google's like, oh, we love this brand. It's because like everywhere they go, they run across a link to your brand. So that to that site, and that site gets a lot of power from that.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Bingo, that's exactly it. And that's why brands get things much, much faster. I have two major brands on my client list right now, and that's exactly how it's working. And it's a luxury that you can surf on. It's really cool.
It is. I used to work for the main government site for the U.S. government called USA.gov.
Oh, there's heft.
Oh my gosh. We could just change some words on a page and we go from like 20,000 visits to 200,000 visits, you know, because it was so powerful. So, yeah. Because we get the right terms is what I mean. We get the right terms. So, because they weren't really good at the right terms. They were the government. So I was helping them do that. So yeah, so anyway, but yeah, so the Parasite SEO is coming up. We know Forbes has already indexed their coupon site. Parasite SEO, Google has a definition. It's called site reputation abuse is the full name.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
we'll continue using Forbes as an example because they've made themselves an extremely cool example, and you know, yeah, I'm really, really unworried about anything that they might have to say about what we got to say, because they, hey Forbes, you did this openly. So I don't think removing the coupon and their mega mess of affiliate links is going to help them one bit, because they're still selling access to their domain to, you know, publish your articles. You just can't put all your spam ass links on it. So there's less incentive to do it, but they're still open to doing it.
Yeah, they do. And kind of funny today. Someone took a list of 40 sites that are doing Parasite SEO and sent them to Google on LinkedIn. So I don't know. I will see what the damage is. Again, a lot of these are going to be big brands. So we'll see how much damage they actually suffer. Like in this last update in March, people lost 90% to 100% of their traffic. So I don't see that happening to Forbes because they didn't no index their coupon section. But the coupon section could go away. That's for sure.
But I don't think it's going to be site-wide. Clean up a good deal of web pollution, and it would also clean up a good deal of social media pollution, where somebody puts up something that uses the credibility of a brand like Forbes, but it's selling little yellow pills that'll make you blue.
Yes. There is a little bit of a fine line. I'm interested to see how they're going to walk, though, and that is a lot of new sites do actual, like, you know, pages on like, let's find out why New York Times isn't doing this. I'm just using them as an example, is selling Mountain Dew, right? And it's like, it's not related to their product at all, but it's how they're surviving because of the cuts to newsrooms and journalism and funding. So it'll be interesting to see where Google decides this is Parasite SEO and this is somebody just trying to fund their website.
Well, and this is where things get really hard and heartless in many ways.
Yeah.
If you're doing something that's in one way or another detrimental to the web to fund your website, then maybe you shouldn't be doing that. And maybe it is Google's place to try to clean that out.
Mm.
Although they'd have to be whistling past the graveyard. Well, they did it, as we're going to talk about later.
Yeah. And here's the official way that they define it. So we are all on the same page, because a lot of times people mean it different ways. Site reputation abuse is when third-party pages are published with little or no first-party oversight or involvement, for the purpose is to manipulate search rankings by taking advantage of the first-party site ranking signals. Mm-hmm. So years ago, I uncovered a fraudulent situation where this company had gotten old eHow content. They bought it all after it had been devalued with Panda. And they would go to a big brand. I was working with a big brand. And they say, we'll take over your subdomain for 5 years. And we're going to post articles. And then they posted all these articles that had been like killed with Panda. So they weren't doing very well. And then I found that there was like an ad fraud network going on top of it. So, but that would be definitely like total third party. That would be totally site reputation abuse spam, right? Like you gave over your domain, part of your domain, mm-hmm. you gave it to people, you let them run it. You have a contract with them that you can't even get rid of it if you want to. I did get them out of the contract because of the fraud, but so yes, that would definitely be, there's just going to be like areas where I know some SEOs who work with brands who have legitimate, they product test, they do quality review, they write real articles. And the question is, where is Google going to draw the line? That's all.
Well, indeed. And now, see, this is the hard, the, One of the reasons I have a hard time discussing this aspect of Google's March 2024 back to September helpful content updates is some legitimate good sites, people who were really just trying to share their passion or share information or legitimately help people in one way or another. Travel bloggers are an example. And they also want to make a few dollars doing what they really love. Some of those sites were quite legitimate, gave good information, were quite helpful to people, helped sell cabins in the accommodations industries, etc. They were doing a good public capitalist service, you know, like helping people make money. Good things, but you know, one of the things the web is supposed to do. They got hurt. Many of those people got hurt in this update.
Badly.
A bigger bulk of sites were just generated content crap, trying to appear to be doing the same sort of thing as our very helpful travel blogger in whatever niche or industry they were moving towards. And there was a whole bunch more of them who were definitely the ones being targeted, and they definitely got hurt as well. But as with every wide net that Google casts, a bunch of good fish get caught up with the bad.
Yeah, but I would say normally, because I've done site recovery for a really long time, and normally, yes, there is some collateral damage, but it's not, you know, I'm sitting on Twitter watching site after site after mm-hmm. site owner talk about how their traffic's all gone, and they were like, I wrote about travel for 15 years that I love to do. And I am noticing, like, I'm doing a spam review right now, manual action spam review. And they took shortcuts. It's not a bad site. It's actually a site that provides useful information, but they took shortcuts. And those shortcuts were things like link buying, guest posting, AI content where the AI content is thin and doesn't represent a really good piece of helpful content. So there are those that got hit just because they either didn't know they were taking shortcuts or did know, but didn't think they get caught. But then there's also people that have very legitimate sites, and this is machine learning. And so I still, from what I've seen, I've collected about 50 of them. I'm still thinking there is a possibility that the algorithm has gone a bit awry, but we don't have any proof of that at this point.
Well, I mean, the proof is in, I think, history. It always does. And then they have to dial it back a little bit and make corrections and make, which they'd never actually do, heartfelt, but ultimately meaningless apologies to the people who did get hurt. Google can't, how to say this? The other part of making it hard to cover a story like this is I have to say this line, knowing it's not entirely true. Google can't pick and choose favorites when it makes a massive algorithm update. Now is
that is very true.
A couple of weeks ago, I just said that's entirely true. But after the scandal that's breaking right now, there's a lot of things Google can do, but it shouldn't. But it's capable of definitely doing, even though we know it shouldn't.
And I would say though, this is not to me. This doesn't have the fallout normal SEO updates have or Google updates have. This one seems pretty severe in the maybe we did something wrong. Just because of all the sites I'm seeing. So many just blog owners, niche site owners, not affiliate marketers trying to make millions of dollars off of, you know, gambling. I'm talking about people who are like, I went traveling and here's my hotel affiliate link. And so I do feel like this one is, there's something wrong. Sort of like Penguin had some serious issues. Like they would transfer the devaluation to your news site if you created one and they could figure out it was you, right? That's pretty awful. So I have a feeling that this one has some awfulness we haven't uncovered yet. We won't know until it's fully rolled out because they still, people could the last week suddenly get all, they could take that classifier off for the helpful content update in September, which no one seems to have recovered from, and then move it all to the page level classifier, which would make so much more sense. Why are you taking away 90% of someone's site traffic because you don't like 20% of their pages, right?
I never really understood the we are going to clunk you over the head because you have a foot injury. Mm-hmm. Way of thinking.
Well, I understand it for spam.
You really want something to cry about? I'll give you something to cry about.
Yeah, I mean, I understand it for spam. You want people never to do it again. You want people to know this is what can happen to you. I get that. But I think we're at a point now where people are getting donked and have no idea why in the world that happened because they thought they followed the rules. They shouldn't be losing 90% of their traffic.
Okay, well, the only dispute I have with your sentence there is they thought they followed the rules. I'm really, you know, the I'm coming from the Dr. Gregory House School of SEO here. And when a client tells me they completely followed the rules, I know they probably didn't.
Oh, sure. Yeah, they're like, I will tell everybody out there, if someone is helping you recover your site, it's sort of like you go to the doctor. Don't say you don't smoke a pack of cigarettes a day when you do, because we see it and we know. So just help us get to the answer faster. And we're like, okay, we can knock that one off the list because we know that you smoke a pack of cigarettes a day.
But I mean, the problem is when you're dealing with organizations like businesses, there's often layers of responsibility. Like there's a salesperson who sold something and the tech person who implemented it and the, you know, the management person who told both of them to do different things, you know?
Yeah.
So you get ice or resistance at so many different stages when you're dealing with businesses, like Christine says, just be upfront the whole way through. Otherwise, it's your money, but you know, it's our reputations.
We're just there to help.
Well, that's the whole thing. Indeed. But like I said, it's the client's money, sure, but it's our reputations because either we get the job done or we don't. And we love getting the job done.
We do. We live for that hockey stick at the end that goes straight up. That's like our dopamine hit. So
it really is.
It is. Yeah. It can make us really sad when we don't get that.
Okay. Quick moment to mention our sponsor Audience Key. Tom Risling, the founder and CEO of Audience Key, is still hiking around the base of Everest, literally.
Yeah, he's got some amazing pictures. It looks like he's having a great time.
He's going to be a lot of fun when he comes back and goes back on the lecture circuit.
And just
a lot
just
of fun stories there.
Yes, just a reminder to people for Audience Key, it's like a keyword tool. It's like all these other things, but it also can work on the edge. I saw a bunch of people talking about Shopify limitations with creating categories, you know, for like e-commerce. It can help you actually do that. It can do it from the edge and it can actually give you the ability to create real categories in Shopify. So it's a really good tool.
Imagine if we had that when we were working with that publishing client like 3 years ago, two years ago.
Yes.
And they didn't understand what we were trying to tell them, which we mapped it out. We could have just done it ourselves.
We could have, and you just bypass all the devs and they set it up for you. It's awesome.
Bing, bang, done. And like I said, it's reputation on the line. Yes. Bing, bang, done. We could have got it done so fast.
Bing, bang, done. I like that.
Audience Key. Bing, bang, done. That's the new commercial.
So since we have some quick updates in AI, because I know we want to get to the big story.
Okay. Let's go through them really fast because I am so chomping at the bit to go to the big story.
So OpenAI is rumored that it's going to drop ChatGPT-5 maybe soon, maybe on Altman's birthday. He will be 39. That's a thing, like related to it. It's just going to have a lot more tokens. It might be multimodal, where you'll be able to do everything in one place, like DALL-E and all that kind of stuff. There really is not a lot of information on it yet, though, because it's OpenAI and they're super hush hush. So, and that leads us into Meta AI launched their tool this week. And if you're looking, if you're in Facebook, and you're like, "Where's my search bar? I just want to search for somebody." It's now the Meta AI symbol that kind of rotates. It's bluish. And you click that and then you get Meta AI. It's just another chatbot. I don't really see the big importance of it. Maybe other people will. I tried it this week. I got it to tell me how it steals content, which is kind of fun. And then they're using Google Search and Bing for queries for like actual search, you know, if you're searching for something. So, but I don't know. It just seems a weird place for this. I don't know. Have you tried it yet, Jim?
You know what? Shauna's got it on her phone. My wife has it. I don't have it. It's not on. It's not on my mobile device. It's not on my desktop Facebook. I've tried it on Shauna's device, and we were preparing Passover supper for Monday, and we got every answer we needed. It solved a number of problems for us, but we were looking for like recipes, which something that AI is actually often very, very good at. We weren't looking for information that might, change over time or really need a whole bunch of interpretation. Just the facts on this one, right? So it worked for us, and I was really glad it was there, but I don't have access to it on my phones or my devices.
I'm just looking at it going, I have no need for this. Like, what am I doing? I'm just saying, I'm in Facebook to like read people's stories, share, make some comments. So if I want to search, I go to search. So anyway, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what people think. We'll know in a few months if it was successful.
One thing I am curious about was the change in terms of service notice that I got from Meta Corporation recently. And I am curious about anything I put up at Facebook and where it's going to be used in the future. I'm not sure there's enough to stop me from using their products, but it isn't enough to give me pause and wonder, what the hell am I doing using this product?
Yeah, also Reddit's making you log, like with the API, making you use ID. Like, it's weird. So, but
oh, Reddit's doing that often because of controls around adult content.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
This way they are able to continue broadcasting over many ISPs that require identification for access to adult content.
Speaking of adult content.
Scary, eh?
Yeah, there's a little, this is something someone made as a, hey, this can happen, so we need to be aware. I'm not selling this. But there's an AI camera that strips your clothes off and makes you naked when they take a picture of you. And it's a deep fake photo of subjects. And the reason, it's two artists out of Germany. And what they wanted to do is just show people that with these advancements and lack of regulation, that there's the potential for technology that can do this. And it already exists. So it wasn't like they had to do anything super special. So
I was
just
gonna
be
say,
aware.
What they've created is really a mashup of a bunch of technologies that already exist.
Yes. But it is an AI camera that when it takes a picture of you, it makes you naked. So it's not commercial. You won't, don't worry about like walking down the street right now, but do be aware that is
well,
potential.
Well, these two German artists aren't selling it.
No, that's somebody
for, that's for sure. But the genie's out of the bottle, so to speak.
Exactly, exactly. And because you can make it with common existing tools, someone will probably, we know, someone will probably do it. So I do think we got to talk real quick. And I know we're jumping a bit, but I do think we got to talk really quick about the two things. We got to talk about the TikTok ban, which isn't a ban.
Mm-hmm.
So I know a lot of people are upset on TikTok, but it didn't seem like the first day people were really mad. Second day, maybe a bit more. This is they have up to a year to divest 20% that China owns in the TikTok app. And I can't imagine, I don't know about you, Jim, I cannot imagine a U.S. company not swiping up that 20% because of all the information, the users, the way TikTok works, access to those algorithms. So it's not a ban, and it's not going away, and it's going to be a year, and it's going to be in court. So probably like 5 years before there's even any definite thing done with it.
Well, and a quick note to the executives at ByteDance. Ask anything. Literally, ask anything. Ask 300 times its value, and then add $10 to that. Ask for that, and you'll still probably get it.
Yeah, there's no way this is going away. There's going to be a U.S. company or investor or somebody who wants a piece of that pie. That's a big piece of pie. Yeah. That's like, hey, here's Facebook U.S. when it started and it was doing really well, but it wasn't quite at the top yet. We're going to sell 20%. Anybody want it? Like, oh, no, nobody wants that.
The fire hose of user interest data. And just, I will go to my grave rallying against short form videos, not because I dislike them, but because I like them so damn much. They are so addictive. And I never thought, I'm honest to God, this is like VL, video lottery terminals used to be for boomers. The short, you see people on the subway, all they're doing is watching TikTok. And they're fun videos.
They're fun.
I find myself having spent half an hour watching them, and I don't know a damn thing I watched.
Well, I watch lives and stuff, and I really do like it, but I have seen manipulation happen on the app. I do believe it occurs because, you know, I've been following that since 2015, how that occurs in social.
Mm-hmm.
And then in addition, I know if you see, works with the Chinese government, and years ago he explained how it works, and you, all companies have to report to the Chinese government. So the fact that there's a 20% interest in a country that would like us to go to war with them, it's probably not a great thing. And so, and they also have been known to follow journalists. They got exposed for following journalists where they were using the app, and they don't allow it in their own country. Like, this version is not allowed. So there are a lot of things to be concerned about. And again, it's not going to go away. You, Jim, and I both been in this industry so long. We know that someone is going to buy that 20%. There's just no way it's not.
I've been in this industry forever, and I've been a privacy advocate even longer than I've been in this industry. And it is ironic that the legislation about TikTok is coming from a country that just in the last month reaffirmed all of the surveillance, in the Patriot Act of 2003, like all of it is and more. Was reaffirmed a couple of weeks ago in Congress, and that's everything that happens on the internet gets hoovered up. So the irony's there. I understand. Believe me, I intimately understand the worries about the People's Republic. In profound ways, I understand that, but I can't help but note the irony. Mm-hmm. It's for real. As a foreigner, not a citizen of the United States, whose information gets hoovered by a foreign government routinely, without there's nothing I can do about it. It happens. Every internet signal passes through America, gets sent to Langley. Everything.
So anyway.
Yes. So
one last thing we got to talk about before mm-hmm. we move on. Google is delaying killing the web cookie. So it is. They're now delaying it to 2025. So if you were worried about cookies going away, it's going to be quite a bit longer.
And for everyone who's already transited or in the midst of a transit,
it's in the middle of what?
In the midst of transitioning away from cookies, in the midst of trying to find other ways to measure.
I guess keep going. I don't know, but they just put out this week that they got a lot of pushback, and apparently the way that they were doing it benefited Google. It wasn't like, hey, we're just gonna make cookies, it's gonna be good for everybody. It was like, hey, we're getting rid of cookies, it's really good for us. So they're getting pushback from government regulators too across the world, UK, US.
See, the problem with cookies is they gave away so much personally identifying information, and there's nothing you can do about them. They will follow you unless you, of course, you know, clear cache and clear memory and stuff. But even then, you're disabling yourself because now you've cleared all your passwords and stuff. Cookies are evil and essential at the same time.
Yeah, they're both. It's true, and they haven't found a good substitute yet. But the substitute Google had come up with, its second substitute, is just not as, like, the first one was really bad, and then the second one was like, yeah, not so good either. So apparently, they are going to wait a while, and they're not going to try to roll it out to 2025.
Remember, Craig, the very first one was remember group of cohorts.
Yes.
That was the first way they were trying to get around when the EU was first talking about getting rid of cookies. Google was trying to figure out how to group people so you didn't have to track them individually, but you could still track them by who they are.
Yeah, and it benefited Google tremendously, so that went away. Other companies are like, no.
Look at people.
Yeah, other companies said, no, this isn't happening. We're not doing this.
Okay, so is there anything else? Because we gotta get to, because this is so.
No, that's not the stories, but they're just like general, you know, SEO stuff, which we can talk about next week. They're not time sensitive.
Well, it's been a long week since yesterday, huh?
Yes.
So,
very long yesterday.
Have you had a chance to see Fallout yet?
I have not. I was sick, so I didn't get a chance to watch it.
Well, I ask mostly as a segue into asking what you think the Fallout's going to be from Ed Zitron's essay yesterday, "The Man Who Killed Google Search."
Which is funny because it can't. I found this article because they posted about this. How do you say his name properly? Because I've only seen it written.
How do you pronounce the current head of Google Search?
Well, he's not just search now. He's also a VP. But yes, he was just the head. But well, how do you say it?
Prabhakar Ravikan.
So there's an article about Prabhakar telling the people at Google that they're going to have to work harder, faster, you know, basically move and break things, right? Which interestingly, it's the most viral post I've ever had. And all I did is share it saying, great, so everything's broken. Let's just move faster and break it more, right? But it was in response to that this was starting to get posted. And basically, he's saying to the Google teams that they need to move quicker and faster so that they can be competitive, but it may not be that simple. And that article explains why.
Okay, so for those who haven't been paying attention, here's the rundown. Google is very big, very, very, very big, and it's growing on all fronts by any measurable metric. But the real questions are, and then they've always been, how fast is it growing, and is that growth fast enough? Now, as every search practitioner is going to tell you, a metric is a metric is a metric. Some are really good metrics and some are really helpful and some are stupid and irrelevant. And it really depends on the data and how that data gets used. Often it depends on who comes up with the metric and what purposes the metric serves. So Google has a couple ways of looking at its own metrics. The first and foremost ask questions like, does this improve our product? The second and sadly not so secondary question is, does this improve our bottom line? And this is where the story gets scandalous.
Yeah, well, and let's just give a little context here. So the article is called "The Man Who Killed Google Search," and he says it's a story of how search died. A lot of the stuff that backs up what he says in here is from the DOJ documents from the trial they've been in, so it's not just like pure speculation. He draws some points on his own opinion, but he basically says the story begins on February 5th, 2019, when Ben Gomes, Google's head of search, had a problem. Gary Dischler, the VP and general manager of ads at Google, and I'm not going to say this name right, Shiv Venkatarayam? Venkatarayam?
Venkataranam.
Thank you. The VP of engineering, search, and ads on Google properties had called a code yellow for search revenue due to, and they quote, steady weakness in the daily numbers and the likeliness it would end the quarter significantly behind. Now, code
So
yellow is
this is
not what,
queries, query metrics,
but just real
but
quick, so
decreasing queries.
code yellow at Google was not a like code yellow like in other types of systems. It's the color of the tank top that the former VP of engineering Wayne Rossing used to wear during his time at the company, and it's basically their equivalent of a DEFCON 1, and
Yeah,
it
this
activates
is a state of
everybody.
emergency.
Yeah, and everybody has to stop and leave every project they're working on, and they start having meetings in conference rooms to figure out how they're going to tackle this priority. So basically, 2019, Google's search revenue. Ad revenue is falling. They don't see that they're going to be able to make up the difference, and they call it DEFCON 1. And in the emails from the Department of Justice antitrust case, Dischler laid out the contributing factors as search query growth is significantly behind forecasts. Timing of revenue launches were significantly behind, and a vague worry that several advertisers' specific and sector weaknesses existed. And we should also say at the time, McKinsey also said they're running out of market, like they wouldn't be able to find any new market.
Now, to quickly fill in a couple gaps here, what do search queries create for Google?
Ad space?
Exactly. They create real estate upon which you can place a billboard. And a billboard in this case is a small ad, a Google AdWord, or several Google AdWords. Because every query produces a search engine results page, and that search engine result page gives placements for those juicy and very highly clickable search ads. And that's where Google
Yes.
makes all its money. So if its query count is going down, Google's got a real estate problem, and Google makes its money selling clicks off of real estate.
Yes, it does. And it actually still is 85% of all of Alphabet's revenue comes from ads.
There you
Not
go. And if
just click ads, but but still ads.
so, lack of queries means lack of space to put ads, and that's a problem. But there was a philosophy at Google since day one. Search, organic search, is sacrosanct. It is its own little bubble. It functions its own little ways. And while you can throw advertising into it, you cannot have the value of the advertising influence the way organic search is ranked. Organic search can definitely affect the value of paid search, but not the other way around. If that happens, then users might lose faith in the objectivity of Google search results.
And going against that, on February 1, 2019, Christian Gill, Google's VP of Business Finance Officer, emailed another Google VP of Engineering at Search and Discover and said that the ads team had been considering a code yellow to close the search gap it was seeing, quote. And this is referring to critical growth that was kind of unnamed in the plan. And the head of the engineer search and discover team wrote back the core and said that there's nothing that the search team could do to operate at the fidelity of growth the ads had demanded. Basically saying what you just said. There's no way they could do what they needed to do.
Well, here's the thing. Like, Google is big. It's very, 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 very big. But I have to say this. The web is changing. People's use of the web is changing. Where people are going to get information is changing. What they're looking for itself is changing. And even if none of that change was happening, there are literally finite levels to growth when you already are the absolute dominant behemoth in the market.
98% of search in some European countries.
And then you can't get more search queries if you're it. No one, you can't take them away from Bing because no one's going there.
And because they report to the street as a public company, they're tasked to always make more revenue. So Tokor forwarded these emails to Gomes, who was heading search at the time. He was there since 1999, and asked if they could just discuss this with Sundar Pichai, who's the current CEO, also the CEO in 2019, saying there's no way that he would sign up to a high fidelity business metric to basically do what they wanted to do. So
did you say former head of search?
Gomes, yeah.
Yeah. So why anyway?
Well, we'll get to that. So the email said there was a good, Tokor said in the emails that there was a very good reason that Google's founders separated search from ads, which is what you were talking about.
Herein is where the scandal happens. The Google has been caught red-handed, straight up, and then a Google insider published an essay explaining, like just mapping this out for all of us, how Google broke the basic Ghostbuster protocol. They cross the streams. You never cross the streams. Bad things happen when you do that. And this is bad.
Yeah, because as we go farther in the story, what we find out is the implication may be that they made search worse.
All that anecdotal evidence of everybody going, oh my God, search sucks. This is what they were talking about.
Yeah, it might actually be intentional, not accidental. It might not be just bad engineering. It may be that they intended to do that. And what's fascinating about this article is, yes, some of it's conjecture, but most of this is backed up by emails from the company itself in the DOJ documents. So you can actually go read the emails and see where these events occurred. And so now we've got like the ad team going, we need to make more money. And the search team saying, well, we're not going to do what you need to do because that violates everything that we stand for. And then we move on to
some dude getting, well, he didn't get fired. He sort of got emeritus. They made him a professor emeritus. I never did pronounce that word right. Emeritus. They emeritized him. Ben Noems, who'd been with Google since the beginning, and actually absolutely understood and bought into the philosophy of organic being a sacred place, he was bumped out of his position and replaced by the aforementioned Prabhakar Raghavan, who is now head of Google search, but long-term Webcology listeners will remember this name. Raghavan used to be the head of Yahoo search from 2005 to 2012. If anyone remembers us covering Yahoo's extraordinary decline from being top of the marbles in 2005 to being sold to Verizon for like what, $4 billion? I forget what they got sold for, almost nothing in 2012.
Do you remember why? Do you remember what he did?
Well,
he got rid
what?
Of their search and he replaced it with Bing.
Oh, yeah. Well, because he had stopped investing in it and it sucked so bad.
Yeah. So he's now the VP of a bunch of different things, but at the time this all occurred, he was moved into the head of searches. So,
now, There was one other big name that Christine mentioned several paragraphs back that I think listeners might recognize, and if they don't, they should pay attention to it. And that name is McKinsey. McKinsey is a consulting agency, and they're all about the profit, not about the people. I could tell you a whole bunch of awful stuff McKinsey is behind and responsible for, but I urge you to go look it up for yourself because honestly, seeing it yourself will blow your mind. Terrible, terrible, terrible people. And this is where current head of Google and Alphabet, Sundar Pichai, comes from originally. And it's the kind of mercenary mentality that would take a golden goose and slaughter it, open its stomach, and look for gold inside just to get it now, so you don't got to wait for it later.
Yeah,
That's McKinsey
exactly.
thinking.
And so in the timeline, in February 6, 2019, Gomes said that search was getting too close to the money. And he ended his email that he was concerned that growth is all that Google was thinking about. And this is kind of on that McKinsey report. And then on March 22nd, the Google VP of Product Management, Ken Tak, declared the end of the Code Yellow. And they mostly a bunch of emails congratulating each other. But then this is where they moved into the thing about declining how search worked.
Well,
So there's a lot.
wasn't the Code Yellow ended 2 days after the March 2019 core update started, which was widely thought to reverse a bunch of the stuff that happened previously?
It's possible, but I don't know the depth. I've read that part. I don't know the diff. There's a definitive link there,
Okay.
but they did say, Gomes explained to Fox and Thakur in an email that he intended to send to Raghavan that he's ignored both personally and on behalf of the search team. In a long email, he explained how one might increase engagement with Google Search, but specifically added that they could increase queries quite easily in the short term and user negative ways like turning off spell correction, turning off ranking improvements, or placing refinements, essentially labels all over the page, adding that it was possible that there are trade-offs between the different kinds of user negativity caused by engagement hacking. Engagement hacking, I had not heard that word before I read this article. That he was deeply, deeply uncomfortable with this, and he didn't believe that queries were a good metric to measure search, and the best defense of the weakness of queries was to create a compelling user experience to make users come back. Wow, crazy, right? Compelling user experience.
It's
And
funny
then
hearing Google
March,
say that, huh?
yeah, and then March 2019, the core update to search started. Some people said, in this article, he says people said that they saw reversals of Penguin. I did not at that time. I mean, Penguin was pretty much over in 2016, so I don't know if there's a direct correlation. But that being said, obviously, Gomes was against all this, and Gomes was soon shuttered off to Hinterlands. So, yeah,
And
and then a
this.
few months later, they redesigned how ads shown on the platform. Remember the bright green ad label, and then how it's turned to a black one, and how everything on mobile started to look the same on desktop. That was all as a way to increase clicks to search.
Flash forward through tons and tons of stuff, which is detailed in the
Yes.
Man Who Killed Google search, but it's an extremely long, it's a 15-minute-long read if you read it nonstop. So it's a great read. It's if you're into long form, and if there's any long form thing about search you're going to read this year, this is the thing to read.
By the way, real quick, do you know who worked at McKinsey?
Oh, good God. Tons of Genghis Khan.
No, Sundar Pichai.
Well, indeed, yeah, that's where I said, that's where he came
Yeah.
from. That 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 that's
Yeah.
what that inform, that's what informs a great deal of his thinking.
Yeah, exactly.
And
It came from there.
it's strongly suggested that Sundar, who is not an engineer, who's he's a manager, not an engineer. And that's one of the things that that Zitron's essay does is sort of breaks down people into two kinds of camps with two different interests. One is the search engineers, people who, have a view of how search should work for a certain purpose, and it should work this way for that purpose. And then there's the management people who, it's their job to make the company money, and they think search should work for a certain way, for a certain purpose in this way. Great, great essay.
And I think we can see in his kind of a summarization before he gets to his own personal beliefs, some of the same things working at Google. So I do think there's one thing we can say about McKinsey, because this was found in court and they had to pay $1 billion in settlements. And one of the things McKinsey did was advise Purdue Pharma on how to growth hack sales of OxyContin.
Oh, yeah. McKinsey is partially responsible for the 2008 financial crisis by advising banks to give loans to anybody they could.
Yes. And when McKinsey comes into a company, basically they cut costs, layoffs, and outsourcing. Basically what's going on at Google right now. And then the idea was that they make Google worse. The author calls it the rot economy, which it kind of makes sense. The illogical product destroying mindset that turns the products you love into torturous, frustrating quasi tools that require you to fight the company's intentions to get the service you want. And I can't say that's not far off how Google's been behaving the last few years.
Well, indeed, it seems a natural process of companies. A long-term internet philosopher, Cory Doctorow, called it the e-shitification of companies. This is how they decline. The original founders and their immediate followers, they get the vision. But after that, and everything, you know, people move on in their careers, things change, generation takes over, one generation will take over for another, and the next generation mightn't get that philosophy. We saw this with Twitter. When Musk and crew took over, and a completely different generation from the original founders are now running the place, and they're running it to the ground.
Yeah, and Ragnar,
for whatever reason.
At Yahoo, it's when he started there in 2005, it had 30% market share. And by the time he left in 2012, it was 13%.
Yeah, so people from Google, and I know that a lot more engineers than business people from Google listen. And I know, I mean, I know there's nothing you can do because you're just working in the trenches and everything, but you are in those trenches. And we rely on your product. The whole world does. So, you know, fight for it, would you? We will.
Well, and if you ever want to come on the show to talk, you know, give us a ring. But
even disguise your voice so you sound like Darth Vader and nobody will know who you are.
We can. But I do think that the big thing here is that Google apparently has degraded search for money. And
it's been
like
proven.
Yeah.
And it's not that we think they've done it. That's the thing. But if you had said this, Christine, had you said this statement 3 weeks ago, or had I said this statement 3 weeks ago, the other one of us would have said, hey, you can't really say that. No, you can't. And you should.
You can. Yeah, you can. And so we don't know, you know, we don't have the details on all the outcomes of making search worse. And I'm not saying they're related, we don't know at this point, but like when everyone last month was talking about the devastation of the update and they were getting into conspiracy theories about how they're being targeted and stuff, I was like, well, no, that's not how it works. Yeah, well, maybe it could be. So we don't know that it is, but we definitely need to keep an eye out for, keep a closer eye on what Sundar is doing and Raghavan are doing with Google.
Well, in the case of the people who, did you remember when Google made its first like extraordinary public error, like the biggie when it made links a massive commodity? It did this like on purpose, but not on purpose. But it promoted links using the PageRank toolbar. It literally overnight links became sellable, and then Google had to spend years running that backwards. Don't sell links, we will bash you over the head if you do. And to this day, until of course Penguin, and then they eventually had to make it where we don't give a damn about links unless they're really good, just to deal with the problem they themselves created. That's what this is.
Yeah, and I think that our little paragraph that's the writer kind of sums some things up, but he just said, since, again, how do you say it? Prabhakar?
Prabhakar. Raghavan.
Yes, Raghavan. Took the reins in 2020. Google search has dramatically declined, with the numerous core updates allegedly made to improve the quality of results, having an adverse effect, increasing the prevalence of spammy search, engine-optimized content. And we do know, you and I, from working in the industry and what we're seeing and hearing, that on this last update, a whole bunch of spam was surfaced. And last year, That was a huge issue that a bunch of spam was surfaced. So so whether it's intentional or not, we can't prove, but there's a lot in this article that says, with emails to back it up, that it definitely could be an intended outcome and not an accidental one.
Well, again, now it's going to be very hard to take Google at its word when it says this is our intention. Hidden gems is supposed to be a machine learning thing. It's maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I don't know. I took them at their word until recently.
Yeah. And
like
also,
recently being the last 24 hours.
Oh, I had a crazy moment with some hidden gems stuff last week. But yeah, I agree. And I think it's unfortunate because, you know, the SEO industry and Google always has like this kind of love-hate affair. But what Google produces in its search results are websites for people to use. And that's basically really its product. And we're the ones that communicate the information from Google to clients to make sure that they're doing good sites. And I don't know if this story continues to explode that SEOs are going to, like a lot don't trust anyway, but we do mostly what Google tells us, that we're going to trust they're doing it for the betterment of the sites. And that's huge. Like, are you trying to surface spam? Should we make sites so you'll surface the spammy version? I don't know. Obviously not, because that can get hit by an action. But I'm just saying that you won't trust what Google says anymore. And I think I've been saying that Sundar needed to be fired for about a year now. I'm just into the void. But it really is time that if Google doesn't reassess its management team, I think it's going to be the MySpace of the search industry in 1 or 2 years.
That's very possible. It's very possible. Yeah. And then, you know what? Everybody has always said, everyone's been looking for the Google killer out there. And you can think of the litany of search engines that have come along that were supposed to be the Google killer. In reality, the only thing Google has to fear is Google itself.
Right? Did you ever think Google killed Google?
Yes, that's, I've been saying this all along. Google is so big that the only thing that can take it down is its own mistakes. Eventually, yeah. And eventually it'll make them, because this is what empires do.
But the thing is, these aren't even mistakes. This is, well, there are mistakes, but...
No, this is a hell of a mistake. I dispute that in big words.
Yeah. Like, let's make, instead of making a better product like Gomes told them, let's make it a worse product and we'll get more searches. Like,
well,
what?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? They sold more ads. They made more money.
They did.
They made their shareholders happy. Yeah. For a brief period of time, they gave their shareholders great value.
I call this the tsunami effect, though. So businesses that think short-term like this for immediate effect and ignore the long-term, like they're out in the ocean. It seems all calm and nice. They're in their little boat, right? And underneath the surface, they're building up resentment, building up business issues, building up revenue issues, right? Quality issues. And then one day it just crashes on the beach. And everyone in the business world is like, how'd that happen? It's like, well, what do you mean? That's been going on for like 5 years, 10 years.
Well, here's the thing.
Like,
the business people don't know until they get to shore.
Right, exactly.
They're out there in their boat. They don't know that thing's been disturbed. They don't know nothing until they get back to shore.
Exactly. And Google's definitely building up a tsunami underneath those waters, I think. Unfortunately, because, you know, one of the things we've always liked about doing what we do is Google wasn't always perfect or anything, but at least you thought they were trying to do the right thing most of the time. But here it's like, no, we're just going to surface spam because you'll search more because you can't find anything. Well, you know what's happening right now because I can't find anything? What's happening? I'm going to Bing.
Yeah,
I went to Bing 5 times yesterday because I couldn't find anything.
There you go.
Right?
Gone, daddy, gone, eh?
Yeah. I mean, how many times in my last 10 years I could tell you I searched Bing regularly during the week, it would be zero. And now it's a pretty regular destination.
Have we mentioned recently that you can get a whole crap ton of information out of Bing Webmaster Tools that you don't get from Google Search Console? And this information isn't just amazing for ranking on Bing. It's just really good about knowing your general site health.
And it's 100% way you can check if you've been hit by a Google update. Because if you're fine on Bing and you're down 90% in Google, you know for sure you're hit by Google.
Indeed, eh?
Yeah.
So, hey, Google, let this serve as a shot across the bow. Well, this and the 16 other of the 17 top podcasts for 2024, they're also talking about this topic this week. I 100% guarantee it. And well, you know what? There's a bunch of other podcasts and journalists and just people out there on Reddit and in forums who are also talking about this. So let all of us serve as a shot across your bow right the hell now. Don't do that. Don't cross the streams. Don't play us as fools. You have everything in the world to lose, literally, because right now you have everything in the world.
This is very true. And I don't know if you know this little bit of ancient history that many people aren't aware of, but when early days, when like the affiliate people were making millions on PPC, were getting tired of Yahoo, they just started moving people over to the idea that Google would be a better engine. So we'll see what happens with Bing, because Bing actually converts better than Google. Just doesn't, never done as well as Google, that's all.
It's faster to type too, eh?
It's much faster. And you know, when I get the stories for us every week, I go to Bing because I can't get, if I put in Google News stories, or I don't get any stories. I just get Google News because the algorithms are pretty broken right now. So I go to Bing and get our stories every week. So
on that, we got to get going. I have a very hard stop at the very top of the hour because I have a meeting coming up after this. But we're going to be talking about this again next week and the week after and the week after. We're probably going to not stop at talking about this until something really positive happens with Google. Or something really negative happens with Google, whichever comes first.
Yeah, very true. Because this isn't going to drop. The story isn't going to drop because this massive set of updates that just occurred look like they're falling in line with the create bad search results edict.
Well, again, so. I think this might be the UFO. The unfunk ourselves, whether they'll be successful or not, I don't know. We don't know yet, but I think this is, you know, I'm by trade, I'm an optimist, right? So I'm going to go with Google's writing its own ship because it has to, because if it doesn't, oh my God, I don't know what any of us are going to do. I mean, I know exactly what we'll do. We'll jump to a different engine. But that's disruption sucks. Disruption sucks, Christine. Disruption
it
sucks.
It does. I mean, I like the edict disrupt all things. So, yeah, and maybe we'll even get lucky and we can get the author on sometime in the next couple weeks.
I hope so. Okay, folks, you've been listening to Webcology recorded live to podcast on the 25th of April, 2024. As I said at the beginning of this episode, mark this date on your calendar. You're going to be referring to it in the near and long future, much as we refer to the Florida update now. On behalf of Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls, this is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media. You've been listening to Webcology on WMR.fm. Thanks to Audience Key, our sponsor, and thanks to Brasco and Ricky in the studio, Darren and Brandy in the office, and everybody at WMR. Be good, be kind, rank well. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye, everybody.